Tonight on Arena. On TV, Amanda Land, Apple Cider Vinegar and Clean Slate, and new albums from Inhaler, Ollie Alexander and Adrian Crowley, all up for review. Five one double 51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena and you can watch us on rte.ie/arena. TV reviews to start this evening. First up, Apple Cider Vinegar, an Australian drama series on Netflix based on the true story of the convicted scammer Belle Gibson, who falsely claimed on her online platform that she had cured herself of brain cancer through diet, exercise and alternative therapies. Starring Caitlin Dever as Belle and Alicia Debenham Carey as rival social media guru Mila. Clean Slate is Prime Video's new comedy, in which Laverne Cox plays Desiree, a trans woman who returns to her small Alabama hometown after 23 years to reunite with her father, Harry, the owner of a local car wash. But Harry, played by George Wallace, is oblivious to the fact that the son that went away is now a proud trans woman. Wallace and Cox are also credited as writers and producers in the series. And after three seasons, the BBC's much-loved sitcom Motherland ended in 2022. This week, they launched a spin-off from it called Amandaland. Lucy Punch reprises the role of Amanda, who's suffered a change of fortune following her divorce and has had to downsize from leafy Chiswick to South Harlesden, or Soha, as she calls it, and deals with her rebellious teenagers who have picked up some bad habits at their new state school. Tut, tut. Jen Gannon, Chris Wasser have been watching all three. They're with me in studio now. And let's start with Apple Cider Vinegar. True story, as I said, of this cancer scammer, Belle Gibson. She was the toast of the tech and wellness world, backed by deals with Apple and Penguin. Series stars American actress Caitlin Dever. It has to be said, with a pretty good Aussie accent, although you'd have to ask a person from Australia that, really, wouldn't you? However, this is like a number of kind of scam stories that have been about young, most of them about young women, in fact, as scammers in recent times, Jen.
Yeah, we've been here before. In 2022, I think it was, there was this rash of high-profile, big-budget series that were pulled directly from the headlines that focused on that kind of QuickBook culture of, like, the digital age. So you had the dramatizations about, you know, shocking entrepreneurs like Elizabeth Holmes and the demise of Theranos in The Dropout, starring Amanda Seyfried. Then you had, you know, something like We Crashed. That was the story of the rapid rise and fall of WeWork and Adam Newman, played by Jared Leto. And then you had Anna Delvey, that curious fake heiress trickster in Shonda Rhimes inventing Anna. And there was something about, like, snappy and poppy about these shows, because they were from those articles, those podcasts, those documentaries that were in the zeitgeist at the time. So, I mean, it felt somehow appropriate to kind of capitalize on these stories very quickly. So not all of them, I think, were that successful. I wasn't a huge fan of The Dropout. I thought the actual podcast that it came from was actually better. And I think they pulled out the story. The Anna Delvey story was a Vanity Fair article, and I pulled it out to unbelievable lengths in inventing Anna. But Belle Gibson, this is a truly jaw-dropping story.
And it's it's very big story, but let's have a listen to her, first of all, Caitlin Dever, describing the moment when she says she was told she had brain cancer.
My doctors say we don't know how to categorise you anymore. You keep defying our predictions. I was given 6 weeks to live, 4 months tops. That was 4 years ago. Human beings are capable of anything.
There you go, Caitlin Dever as Belle, what's her second name? Belle Gibson in Apple Cider Vinegar. That story is a huge story, but into the mix come two other stories. in different timelines and all sorts of things in the opening section.
Yeah.
But just for clarity, give us the other two stories in their essence.
Yeah,
Chris.
I think it's important to remember that when we're providing a synopsis here, it's very much a linear structure we're giving you.
But as opposed to the show.
Yeah, the show itself is a bit jumbled. But we have the story of Belle Gibson, who, as you heard there, she tells everyone around her that she does have brain cancer and she only has maybe 6 weeks to 4 months to live. She doesn't, and she kind of makes a name for herself online with an app called The Whole Pantry, a cookbook, and also by telling her thousands and then eventually millions of followers that she cured herself with alternative methods, with exercise, with a healthy diet. But she was essentially ripping off the sort of brand of someone who was actually living with cancer. There was another person named Mila, who is loosely based on a real life person, but the names have been changed. And Mila was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer, a rare sarcoma in her arm. And we see throughout this series that the doctors say to her, you know, at first she does receive a spot of treatment, but it's not working. And her doctors urge her to go down the amputation route, because if her arm is amputated, then the cancer won't spread. And that will increase her life, like exponentially. But she doesn't want to do this. She's so young. She has her whole life ahead of her. And she sees that, like, it will be so traumatizing. So instead, she travels the world with the support of her family and also by borrowing money to seek alternative methods. And then in doing that, develops a brand of her own and acquires a huge following online. And Belle kind of sees the love and the affection that all of these followers have for Mila. And she thinks to herself, because Belle's life, you know, she's not in a good place herself. No. And she thinks, I want that for myself.
Yeah, and it's not just about making money, which is kind of where our
not really
going
not
to be brought, if they're going to be brought towards the Belle Gibson character at all, they're going to be brought that way. And then there's a third storyline about a young
Lucy.
I think this is totally fictional. Lucy.
Yeah, so basically, Lucy is kind of, she would be based on the people, the followers that Belle had, and
kind of
how attractive Belle was with, like, Instagram. She was very early adopter of Instagram and saw how curating your life is so important and the way you put yourself across and how, you know, people view you. So Lucy is this waitress who is a Belle Gibson devotee and is desperate to ditch traditional methods of medicine when she feels that, like, her breast cancer treatment is not working for her, or she doesn't come to an end of a journey that has been very tough on her. So she follows the Whole Foods app, and Belle's Instagram religiously, and her boyfriend is Justin, played by Mark Cole Smith. He's really worried about her, really worried about where this will lead her. But Justin is also happens to be this investigative journalist. And when Chanel, played by Aisha Dee,
who's involved
with Mila, ex-colleague of Belle,
she
arrives at this paper itching to tell the real story of Belle.
Yeah.
So there you have the setup of the
right,
three
so you've the,
narratives.
You've the three of them now. It is very convoluted in the way it sets it up in the series itself. But those, the three women, the three central performances are extraordinary.
Oh, brilliantly performed. You'd never know if you haven't seen Caitlin Dever in anything else before, you've been missing out, but you would never know that she wasn't Australian, to these ears at least.
Yeah.
You know, it's a committed and capable and just commanding performance. But also, like, she's in good company. Like, there's not a false note in place here in terms of the performance. The storytelling, however, it's a bit, I mean, you do have to lean into it. It does require an awful lot of patience. I sometimes wondered if the Lucy element, it's almost the show
the young waitress, the most fictional of the characters.
Yeah, and as you said, like, maybe an amalgamation of all of, like, to kind of show you how easily kind of, you know, people at their weakest,
the people who are often the victims.
Exactly,
this,
yeah, could be kind of roped into this. We kind of maybe don't need that in the story, and there are other parts of it that didn't really work for me. Every now and then, mostly at the start of every episode, you'd have this Big Short-esque introduction where the characters would just turn to the camera and say, this is, you know, a truish story based on a lie, but we've changed some things. Don't really need that sort of thing. It's a bit gimmicky.
But I do think there's an aspect of that, that the show wants to appeal to those who would have been Belle's captive audience. So that kind of messy story kind of unravels through, like, a series, like, of emojis on screen, selfies, message board entries, and also has, like, very poignant pop songs, like, from Katy Perry's War to Doja Cat.
And
so
it is
appealing to that market.
When I got past the convolution of the first episode, I thought, I do want to see more of this.
Definitely. Yeah.
So same from you, Jen, and Star. Stars.
I do. I think it's a timely, you know, story that people do need to pay attention Stars. To. So I would give it 3.5 at Caitlin Dever's excellent.
And what are you saying, Chris?
I think the best stories don't require any dressing up, so it's a bit too much kind of going on, but the performance will keep you there. So 3.5 out of 5.
3.5 out of 5. Let's move on then to Prime Video's Clean Slate, upbeat sitcom about a trans woman, Desiree, played by Laverne Cox, who returns to her family home to repair her strained relationship with her father, Harry, played by George Wallace, straight-talking Alabama car wash owner who has no idea that the child who left as a son called Desmond is now returning as his daughter, Desiree. Let's have a listen to the moment when Laverne Cox, as Desiree, arrives at her father's door.
Hey, Miss Fancy Lady. I don't know what you're trying to sell me, but you can just go ahead and leave your little Watchtower magazine, because this really ain't a good time right now. My son's coming in a minute now.
Harry.
Harry, how you know my first name? What's the suitcase for?
Dad, I'm your daughter, Desiree.
Desmond?
No. It's Desiree. I've always been Desiree. Clearly, we have a lot of catching up to do. May I come in?
Yeah, come on in.
I thought you had a son.
So did I.
It's the neighbour from next door shouting about thinking he had a son. That's Desiree, played by Laverne Cox, George Wallace as Harry, father and daughter. You can even hear it in the music there. This is treating a clearly serious topic, and if you think of recent pronouncements in the US, a very serious topic indeed, but it's treating it with a very light touch.
It is. It's what you would definitely call a gentle comedy. Mm. And I'm a huge fan of something like Somebody Somewhere, and I would call that gentle enough, but it also is extremely kind of philosophical, but it's easy viewing. But it reaches those heights because it feels like a film or a drama series where, you know, it doesn't follow a beat joke. Whereas I think with Clean Slate, it has this, you know, for something that has a very modern topic and very modern, you know, sensibilities, the structure of Clean Slate is considerably old fashioned. And I think there's a warmth to it because of that. It feels like it's harkening back to the typical structure and of an archetype of the 70s sitcoms, and that would be because it's Norman Lear is part of this. Like, this is Norman Lear's swan song, and for anybody that doesn't know him, it's, you know, he is the American sitcom royalty. He basically, you know, wrote the genre defining All in the Family and The Jeffersons, so he would be considered, you know, the master of that craft.
But is it necessarily a problem that it has that old-fashioned feel for it? Because it is about
it works for a
daughter returning after 23 years, so you know, The dad is 23 years older and was pretty set in his ways 23 years ago. He's absolutely and totally set in his ways now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it works for it. And Norman Lear's shows, his sitcoms, like, they always found a way to kind of not really sneak, but like make sure that you knew that there were some important political and timely social issues involved in very relatable stories. And this is the case here. And I quite love the fact that it's such a familiar tale, you know, growing up child going back to their hometown because life in the big city didn't work for them. And when they arrive home to maybe just one parent instead of two, they don't recognise him because it's been so long. But the twist here is that they don't recognise him because Desiree has transitioned. And that is quite an interesting twist that does speak to, you know, America today. But it's also, I mean, some viewers might look at it and go, this is sort of a Disney-fied approach to kind of, you know, this topic, because Henry accepts his daughter, the dad accepts his daughter Desiree, you know, like that, so quickly.
But then he does, and then there's a row.
There are arguments down the line, but it is a very kind of cozy depiction. But I'm okay with that because it's a sitcom. It's supposed to be, you know, that.
And because it's a sitcom, there are lots of kind of, you know, the neighbor is going to be in there. Mm. There's a fella who turns out is just out of prison who works in Harry's car wash.
Mac.
You know, and he has a young daughter. And the minute Desiree and him see each other, you can see there's a little spark between
the
two of them.
And then there's a spark between the daughter and Desiree as well, as someone who understands her implicitly and gets where she's coming from. And they're kind of like on the more modern side of things.
So does that, you know, does it address the seriousness of this topic enough?
It kind of sidesteps a lot of the bigger issues. It doesn't really want to engage with them. It kind of, the bigots are there, or that bigoted sensibilities are there, but they don't want to focus on it. And I guess that's what Chris was saying. Like, it wants to be cozy. It wants to be comforting. And I think that's nice to have something like that, especially in America at the moment, where you can see a dad that, you know, will never stop loving their child, no matter what. And I think that's a great message to have right now. But it may not be the funniest of comedies. It's a bit fusty for me, because there's a way that it's set up where you feel like the jokes land, but then you're waiting for maybe an audience to laugh along or applaud.
Laverne Cox is obviously coming to this with life experience in this, in this regard. And you would have thought, therefore, if anybody's going to know this type of journey, she's going to know it.
Yeah, and I think maybe you can see a little bit of a journey in there. She is listed as a co-creator alongside George Wallace. And as a result of them having worked behind the scenes, they do share a wonderful chemistry. And there are some things in there which I started to kind of think, is that based on a real life thing? There's a lovely little thing where Desiree has, she insists on a pronoun jar for every time that Harry, her father, identifies her incorrectly. Yes. He has to put a dollar in the pronoun jar. And I did start to kind of think to myself, is that something that was there? What I quite liked was the fact as well that it approaches Harry. He says to Desiree at the very beginning, this is going to take me a while to get my head around the fact that after 40 years, he always had a son, now he has a daughter. I just might need a bit of time, and I might need to talk to you about that. And it's very good at showing that obviously the most important person involved in the transition is the person going through the transition, but other people need to be given a little bit of time too. And it's very good at showing you that conversation is healthy, questions are healthy, and that communication there between them is healthy.
But I also like the exploration of her life outside of that, as in the disappointments of being back in a small town and having to deal with that.
It deals with that.
And not be in New York and not be, you know, pretentious anymore, or, and to deal with those people she thought she'd lost touch with years ago. And I think that kind of is where it kind of flies for me, where it elevates itself.
Yeah, definitely. I know. There was a lovely moment when she said, I haven't explained the transition, said, there's something else you need to know. I'm a vegetarian. and of course, it's playing into all of those stereotypes as well. Prime Video is where you'll see this. Stars from you on it, first of all, Chris?
Yeah, I don't think real life is as cozy for, or as accepting in today's America and indeed elsewhere for transgender people. But this show shows, you know, what a lovely life it could be if it was. And so I admired this an awful lot, and I'll stick with it. So we'll go with 3.5 out of 5.
And what are you saying, Jen?
I think 3.5. I think it's nice to have, it's great to have a trans character, you know, front and centre of something that is a traditional genre, you know, as a sitcom, and have this warm centre to go along with it. And that's something that I think, you know, it's good to have that screen time and find a different audience. And you're going to do that with a sitcom. So 3.5.
3.5. Let's move on then to Amandaland, currently showing on the BBC. This is a spin-off from Motherland, but it's centred around the daughter in Motherland, the daughter being Amanda, played by Lucy Punch. The mother in Motherland was Joanna Lumley. She's still here in this. Maybe for those who... Just give us the setup of what Motherland was and where we find ourselves now, Jan.
Yeah, it's hard to think of not being in the Motherland landscape when you see Lucy Punch, in fairness, first of all. But it's about, like, Motherland is about, you know, skewering and really skewering, hardcore, like it could be tough, like the middle class mothers at the school gates, what their situation was, the WhatsApp group, the hierarchy of mothers, the ones that look down on each other, the ones that are, you know, just trying to get out the door with, you know, the right shoes on and the homework done. And then you also had the single dad as well thrown into the mix. But the thing is, those characters were so vivid. You had someone like Julia, played by Anna Maxwell Martin, and she was always in the middle of like this permanent breakdown, or someone that was just completely over it, who I love, like Liz, played by Diane Morgan. Those characters are gone now, so we have to say goodbye to them.
So Amanda
is coming to the forefront.
Has moved from where to where? Actually, so, I have a clip of her talking to an old school friend who she meets when she moves to this new location, an old pal, a pal, Anne. And she pretty much explains in that what the move has been from leafy Chiswick down to where she is now.
So, you're Georgie and my Darius back in the same class again. Must be the end of days, you leaving Chiswick.
Oh, I'm done with W4. I'm all about Sohar.
Oh, what's Sohar?
Oh, it's what the property experts call South Harleston.
Oh, it's like that area around Wormwood Scrubs Prison.
Yeah, but it's called Sohar. It's Sohar, Nohar, Ehar, Weehar.
Uh-huh.
I'm actually glad I took the kids out of private school. They got way more chance of getting into Oxford from a bog standard state.
Haycroft is fantastic. They've got a great STEM hub.
Okay.
And a rock choir. And the torture scene from A Clockwork Orange was filmed in the playground.
Yeah, more of a book person, Anne.
Well, it's actually based on a book.
Gosh, it's so great to reconnect.
Yes.
After all these years.
So great. Yeah. Because we were worried about you there for a while. What with your divorce and your store closing and your falling out with your mammy.
All right, Anne. Don't you worry about little old me.
That's the final voice you heard there. Lucy Punch as Amanda and Philippa Dunn, Irish actor.
Yes.
Playing the character of Anne. We should mention there's another very important Irish actor in the midst of all of this as well. Currently very successful.
Yeah, Siobhan McSweeney. She makes an appearance as well. And like, I think the
Does that character last, by the way? I've only seen the first episode.
Yes. Yeah. So the thing about she's a chef in like this neighbourhood restaurant that's very hip called Shin.
Yeah, she's married to herself
Lucy Punch's character.
Yeah.
Amanda wants to ingratiate herself with these people because what we know about Amanda is she is this desperate social climber. She is like such a well-realized character. She's this Sunday style supplement reading, Ocado delivery ordering mother who wants to be completely perfect. And like, I think the pinnacle of getting a sense of that character is in an episode of Motherland on, you know, the World Book Day. She sent one of her kids in as Conal from Normal People, dressed as him. So that's what you're getting. That's the kind of person that you're getting here. And I mean, throughout Motherland, we saw that she had this really frosty relationship with her mother, who's an ex-model played by Joanna Lumley perfectly. And the two of them would rely on just down in white wines instead of talking to each other. And she's back. Closer than ever in the vicinity, so it bounces off them.
Now, clearly, we can hear that Jen was possibly coming to this with some background knowledge.
Yeah, I've none.
You came to it with absolutely nothing.
I have zero to offer you here.
How quickly did you understand the world that you were being brought into?
Oh, within 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's very swift.
I think the mark of a decent spin-off is one that remembers the newcomers, remembers that it has to, you know, create a world of its own. Yes, it can have links, it can have in-jokes, it can even have characters from the previous series as this one does, but it needs to stand on its own two feet. And as I said, within a minute, I was in. I knew the background, I knew who Amanda was, and I fell for these characters. I've heard from some people that, you know, kind of taking the character of Amanda, who, you know, part of an ensemble, I suppose, a side character and the sort of character that people love to hate, and making her the focus of attention might not work. But I don't really follow that. I thought she was great here. I thought having Joanna Lumley kind of doing the Joanna Lumley thing again, you know, drinking wine, saying things like she has a carer.
Oh, let's have a listen to her. Amanda thinks, well, that's it. Mum's up in Chiswick being looked after by the carer. And then guess who comes to the door?
Oh, darling, let me in before I get mugged.
What can I do for you, Mummy? We're going out.
I love how you've made your little house look so swishy. I thought I'd bring you a little tuck parcel from Waitrose, now that you've only got a Tesco Metro. A little splash of wine and some Earl Grey chocolates for the children and goji berries for you.
Oh, well, that actually will be really nice for my birch muesli.
You're still doing breakfast? While I'm here, would you do up my brassiere?
Why can't Joy do it? That's what you pay her for. Manners, Georgie, we're going.
I'm not talking to Joy. Why you insist I need a PA? It's...
Mummy, Joy is your carer.
Oh, ridiculous. I'm perfectly capable. Now, just do up my bra and I'll be on my way. Come on. No, Lucer.
Joanna Lumley there as Felicity the mother. Every single line.
Oh,
every
great.
Single line is perfect.
Oh, she gets all the best lines. And I love her character development over the next few episodes as well, where she, it's all of a sudden, it's like she hears about death for the first time. And she's terrified that, you know, people around her are beginning to disappear. There's a great ensemble here. There's Siobhan McSweeney as the restaurateur. There is Mal, who lives, like, because Amanda has moved to a duplex. So she kind of, you know, she has a neighbor downstairs and she hates that. The comic timing here is brilliant. Philippa Dunn's especially. Yes, it's a little bit broad. Yes, it's a little bit slight. You know, it's kind of a different madcap story of the week every time, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and there is quite a broad range of characters, not least of is the fella who he's in downstairs.
Mal lives downstairs,
And there's a constant rise. She wants to charge her car and she's constantly
dropping because
his
she
planning.
Has an electric car, because of course Amanda has
she's
an electric
the
car.
Yeah,
but there's a lot more going on, you know, under Amanda's Reese trench coat and under her subtle highlights. You know, there is a heart to this as well, that I think she's not just this one dimensional harridan. You know, there is something where you can kind of see the worst of yourself in her, but also see, you know, times of failure as well that kind of affect her too. Yeah. So she's not a caricature, which is the best thing about the writing of Amanda Land and Motherland.
And it has to be said too, the episode one has gone out, but I think if you listen to this conversation, you know all you need to know. She's moved to South Harden. She doesn't want to be
there.
Her mother's arrived back.
It also is an exploration of what it's like when an area becomes gentrified, which I think is really clever.
Yeah.
Like, this is what is this about when the middle class moved into a working class area.
Yeah. Will you stick with it? Because I think people could start. It started on Wednesday, February the 5th, but you could start on episode 2 and I think you'd be absolutely fine.
I think you could start on episode 3 or 4 and you'd still be fine. I had originally gone to give this maybe like 3 stars, but I think I've convinced myself that it should be 4 stars. So yeah, give Motherland a go even if you haven't seen Motherland.
All right. And
Motherland fans, you can breathe a sigh of relief. I mean, spin-offs are very strange, you know, no show can be Frasier, not even Frasier, as we've learned. But this is it. Like, and I think Lucy Punch deserves this main role, and I think she's fabulous in it. And 4 out of 5.
A good solid 4 out of 5 for Amanda Land. BBC One Wednesdays started on February the 5th, but as we're all saying, you can pick up. Apple Cider Vinegar is streaming now on Netflix, and Clean Slate available on Prime Video. BBC One for Amanda Land on Wednesday evenings. My thanks to Chris Wasser and Jen Gannon. And so to our album reviews this evening. Dublin's Inhaler return with Open Wide, their third album of stadium-ready indie rock. Ollie Alexander steps out solo with his album Polari, dance floor-focused pop record, following his years and years' success. And Irish singer-songwriter Adrian Crowley delivers Measures of Joy, a poetic and atmospheric collection that leans into his signature introspective style. Joined in studio this evening by Aoife Barry and Danny Kilmartin, who have been listening to all three albums. We're going to start with Inhaler and Open Wide and a track called A Question of You. Question of You from the album Open Wide from Inhaler. We might as well get the elephant in the room out of the way to start out, Danny. Elijah Hewson, the singer that we heard there, is the son of Bono and Ali Hewson. It must be very annoying for him that that's how most reviews will have to start, but you have to address it. The issue here is it easy or not to hear Elijah as opposed to Bono?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, he doesn't half sound like him. Granted, what he does with it is entirely different to anything Bono would have done. I mean, there's certain parts of his timbre you could compare to Bono right off the bat, but the way he kind of twists
his father's son, like, no matter who his father is, he's going to sound a bit probably vocally.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, look, it is what it is. Worth noting as well that the previous two albums that they put out went to straight in at number one at the Irish album charts, and I can imagine this one is probably sure to follow as well. Whether or not there's any influence there, I don't know. But
yeah, well, that's a different question.
Absolutely.
And we don't know the answers, to that. I mean, it can't have been a hindrance, but you still have to produce the goods.
Yeah.
Is this a new... Are we hearing anything new in album number three? Because they rose to fame so fast
through the
first two albums, really.
Yeah,
didn't
and of
they?
Course, I'm sure the interest in them straight away because of Bono being the parentage there is going to bump up some of the interest.
But a hard-nosed producer isn't going to keep at it unless they think there's something in this for us.
Exactly. You know? I mean, they came at the bat with an album that sounded really great. It was kind of a rock album, wore its influences on its sleeve. These young guys, they're only in their mid-20s, let's remember. They're not like old, they're really young.
Yeah.
Sounded fully formed from the get-go. This kind of continues in a similar vein but broadens out their sound a bit. It's a lot more kind of stadium poppy. It is produced by a guy called Kid Harpoon, who has worked with a lot of people, I think including Kings of Leon, but he was the guy who produced Harry's House, the Harry Styles album, which is a really good album, and it was absolutely massive. So he is like a real pop guy, and I think that a lot of edges, or any edges that were there, and they weren't that much, they weren't a very edgy band, was they have been very smoothed over on this third record. I mean, they are aiming towards like the masses. I'm thinking of a band like 1975, particularly early stuff, or Sam Fender, you know, like a music that's like inoffensively, you know, nice sounding. But the problem, and myself and Danny were talking about this earlier, the problem is that you don't get any sense of who this band are. Who are they? I want to know who you are, Elijah.
I was going to ask you precisely that, Danny. You know, when you both have commented on the quality of the production here, but if something is very, very produced, you're hearing the production.
That's exactly it.
Do we know, and let's be honest too, it's not a one-man band. You know, there are a whole bundle of, there's four of them, isn't it?
Four of them
involved
in
the band here. So do we get a sense of who Inhaler are, what Inhaler's identity is?
See, that's the thing. I mean, as good as the album sounds and as danceable and enjoyable as a lot of the songs on here are, like, you know, whether it's Billy which I think is pretty emblematic of what I love and hate about the album. Sounds great, beats fantastic, production is amazing, but it says very little, really. You know, like, this is something to me that, say, 10 odd years ago would have really been lost in the kind of what I call the indie landfill shuffle. Comparable to a lot of just popular sound at a time, whether it was the Coronas or Two Door Cinema Club, or, you know, fun music, great to listen to, but not much to engage with.
Am I wasting my time asking you for lyrics or things here?
I didn't really. I'm trying to think, should I even write any down? Like, I was thinking, I feel like they could have thrown like a Scrabble set across the room and like found a few words and sentences. A lot of like couplets, like rhyming couplets and things that, like, you know, they have, there's a sense of nostalgia. There's one song where they have a video that's set in Dublin, and there's a sense of, he's talking about something about not wanting to be bored, but like, there's literally nothing that really sticks in mind. And I mean, look, they're young. I mean, maybe they've had really nice lives and there's really nothing that much to write about. So don't pay too much attention to the lyrics if you want a lot of depth, but the music is lovely and great.
Well, let's have a listen to a second track called Even Though. Even Though, another track from third album from Inhaler. The album's called Open Wide, and that track, as I say, called Even Though. as you listen to that, as I'm listening to that, you can see, you were saying, Aoife, that they're going to be playing Marley Park fairly soon.
It's Marley Park fairly soon. Like, they're a big band. But they're going to be playing stadiums.
They're going to fill big stadiums.
Oh, big time. And they have that big sound. And I have no doubt that they can really play really well on the stage, that the crowd absolutely loves them. There are shades of bands, like, if you want to compare them to a band that who does things completely differently, but they're taking a bit of their sound from, a band like War on Drugs. They couldn't be more different. And I would urge people who like this band maybe to go and listen to a band like them and see how you get more of a sense of personality and something going on. I'm dying to hear more about them. So in their next album, maybe they'll dig deeper.
Yeah, and I mean,
but they sound great.
Lots of bands give us 2 and 3 albums.
Yeah, and then
there's
they
a breakthrough
a
point when suddenly, oh, that's who they are.
It comes, you know, so, and that'd be exciting, wouldn't it? You know,
stars from you on it, Aoife.
I'm going to give them 3 still. Sounds like
okay.
Sounds like,
and
good,
you,
album,
Danny?
Yeah.
I'd agree. 3. Funny enough, though, we kind of diverge on that point. You're saying you can't wait to hear more. Whereas I'm kind of like, it's album number 3, and I should really get more of a sense of who you are by now.
That is a good
you
point.
Thought you'd have something by now.
Yeah, exactly.
By rights, we probably should.
Okay.
By rights, we should.
That is Open Wide from Inhaler. Let's move on to Ollie Alexander, known for his success with Years and Years. And his breakout acting role in It's a Sin steps fully into the spotlight here with his debut solo album, Polari. Here is a track called Cupid's Bow. Cupid's Bow from Ollie Alexander and his new album, Polari. You know, when I listened there, of course it's a get out on the floor and dance. That's what the song is telling you to do. But there is a bit of a story going on, and I suppose the acting background of Ollie Alexander and the kind of theatricality that he brings when you see him on screen, certainly, and I presume on stage, does that carry what is essentially an album full of big dance floor fillers?
I would say yes and no. I mean, the album title itself references a kind of a slang that was used by the LGBTQI community for years. That kind of it symbolizes themes of visibility and communication, and Alexander's kind of stepping into, as a solo artist, exploring those themes on a more kind of personal and intimate level on this album. So in that regard, yeah, absolutely, it does carry forward. At times, though, I feel like it gets a bit lost in the production. I don't know if you'd feel the same way, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I wondered about that side of things, that, you know, there were 1 or 2 songs when just the pace changed or the instrumentation changed. And I thought, oh, I'm going to hear something now.
Yeah.
But then it just never quite delivered. And it's a bit long at 13 songs. I know that's, you know, that long. But it felt like a very long album.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a lot going for this record. It's really, again, really, really well produced. The references are amazing. I mean, you can hear, I know it's not the greatest reference now, but you can hear a lot of Michael Jackson in the vocals. So leaving aside Michael as a person, the music is really good. We won't get into
Prince,
that argument.
I had a kind of a Prince feel.
There's definitely Prince. There was Kylie, the kind of Eurovision pop, The Weekend, who was doing kind of,
course,
you know,
2000s, 80s. Eurovision.
He was Eurovision entry.
Yeah,
came 18th.
Kind of like gay club dance music.
Yeah,
that's brought
definitely
forward for the 21st century, I thought. I mean, like, I've got a lot of Pet Shop Boys in there, Erasure, Yazoo, that kind of stuff. Dead or Alive, I think, would be a good touch point as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think,
and despite all those influences, and despite, you know, I think a kind of a sameness across the track, you do hear who Ollie Alexander is.
You do. And I think this is a sticking point for me, is that I think, like, there's so much goodwill towards Ollie Alexander because he's such a cool, interesting character, a great actor, really kind of puts himself out there with the music, and that, you know, he's trying to imbue himself really fully into the music and tell a story and tell an LGBTQ+ story as well. But that said, the title Polari is so interesting. Like Danny said, it's got that
wanted more about that.
I wanted way more. Yeah. Instead, you got lyrics, you know, like, you know, take your sorrow and put it on me. Don't be scared. Just believe. Like, it's very kind of rote songwriting. It's a similar issue to what's going on with Inhaler.
Kind of predictable, right?
Very predictable. Yeah. And kind of you could, again, just throw those words on anything. And I feel like there's a deeper, better story that Alexander could be telling us mashed with this really, really strong production with a guy called Danny El Harl, I think his name is, who's worked at Dua Lipa. Again, people are working with these brilliant young producers who are amazing, but we need to bring in more of these young musicians.
Let's have a listen to a little bit of I Know from Ali Alexander and then we get your stars. I know, I know, I know. That's I Know from Ali Alexander and his new album, Polari. And mentioning all sorts of influences you were as you were listening to that. Yeah. It has an 80s and a 90s feel of it, but it is a 2025 album.
Yeah, and I love that movement that we have now of bands, kind of like the Dua Lipa future nostalgia idea, where we are, you know, taking a 2020s look back at 80s and 90s and taking it and doing something new with it. And it's not a pastiche, this album. It's just moving things on a little bit further, which are
stars.
I'd still give it 3, even though I want more from him. Give us more, bands.
Give us more. Yeah. Give us more. We'll give you more stars.
We'll give you more stars. 3 stars.
3. Danny?
I'd agree, yeah. It's a 3. Really confident, theatrical, but a little bit overproduced at times. And the story gets lost.
So 3 is not middle of the road. It's just, you know, it's a little bit better.
No, definitely
not. But there's more in there that you both want to hear. All right, we still have to talk about one more album, Adrian Crowley's Measure of the Joy. We'll do that after these.
RTE Radio 1. I'm a hit, double D. Blu-ray's come with what they say about me. Kneecap, live at 3 Arena, with an extra day due to demand, December 16th. On a knee, fell a thunder in his magic, and if there's a better way to live, I gotta have it. Because I think I'll pay, but when I drink, I'm okay, gets further away every time. Tickets available now, presented by Aiken Promotions. Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
With home delivery from the Irish Times, enjoy award-winning journalism, insightful analysis and news from Ireland and the world. Get the weekend edition delivered to your door every Saturday morning and a premium digital subscription. Right now you can get your first month for just €1. Visit irishtimes.com/€1 to subscribe now. The Irish Times. Fresh thinking, delivered daily. T's and C's apply.
Did you ever work in the UK? If you did for at least 1 year and you're under 71, you can get a guaranteed UK state pension worth up to €300,000 over a typical retirement for just a small payment directly to UK Revenue with no impact on your Irish pension. Most people get €40 back for every euro they pay in. There's a big deadline soon, so act fast. Call Extra Pension in Galway or see extrapension.com. Mind your UK pension and it'll mind you. Service fees apply.
Okay, still with me in studio, Danny and Aoife Barry and Danny Kilmartin. We have our third album to go to, which is Adrian Crowley's latest offering, a veteran of the Irish music scene, obviously past Choice Music Prize winner. This is his 10th album. It's called Measure of Joy, and this is the opening track.
She drinks my tears. Through dead of night, tickle, tickle her fingertips. I hold my breath, and I'm lost at last in the daylight. She waits for me. I clamber down the silhouettes, the water tower, the blinking lights, and I think, lost at last, it's the folly of a fool.
Lost at last. Opening track on Measure of Joy, and even listening to the track of that slows me down from the first two albums that we that we've been speaking about. Neen, that song, that sound, that voice, very much signature Adrian Crowley. Mm-hmm. Eva.
Yeah, he has that kind of baritone, but it's like a delicate baritone. Mm. I think we often think of people like Bill Callahan from the band Smog, and we think of baritone, which is a really strong, hefty voice. His is deep, but a little bit kind of more delicate. Mm. And he's someone who's, you know, like you were saying earlier, he's like a stalwart of the Irish scene. This is his 10th album. He's won the Choice Music Prize. You know, it's like the biggest Irish music prize you could get many years ago. And it's interesting listening back to his albums and tracing where he's gone to get to this point, because this in many ways is very classic Adrian Crowley, and yet it's actually even more stripped back than what I'd kind of remembered. I went back to remind myself of his previous records, and he's pulled things back a lot on this record. He's working with John Parrish, who is the legendary producer. People will know him from working with PJ Harvey. He's a very close, you know, working relationship with her. And I do think that has contributed to a lot of the texture, which you also got on his previous album, which Parrish worked on. A lot of the texture and instrumentation. And I think there's some interesting stuff, like some bossa nova rhythms on this record, which add to that palette. He's pulling from quite a limited palette here, but that's deliberate. And so it feels like a very nocturnal album. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't put this on wanting to get this energy boost. You put it on to like lean back and chill out,
after
get away from the news and everything that's happening.
The high energy possibly of the other two.
Exactly.
And the other aspect, which I went, certainly, and you hear it in that first song, and I found it across first few songs on the album, in fact, Danny. Mm. There were times in previous lyrics of Adrian Crowley's, you just thought, no, this is pure kind of words put together in a poetic type of fashion.
Yeah.
But if you go searching for a meaning, good luck. I mean, there was that was perilously close to I Met Somebody and Fall in Love and Fell in Love.
Yeah, exactly.
Lost at Last. That's what it feels like. And that kind of theme is carried across a few of the
absolutely,
songs.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. I mean, I absolutely adore the kind of juxtapositions on this album. I mean, if you look at Swimming in the Quarry, for example, that real kind of like heartbeat, like,
and he kind of he does that classic thing that he speaks a lot of that as well.
It's, I think that on that particular song it's about as close as he gets to actual spoken word on the album. But just the there's a certain kind of menace to the way he delivers it as well, and as it builds towards the end it gets to this kind of like this weird dissonance, whereas throughout it's very kind of like relaxed. And then you look at something like the closing track, Cherry Blossom Soft Confetti, and just how Latin it is, but at the same time, you know, like you were saying about the bossa nova, but it's contrasted with these images of like death and graveyards and time passing and shadows and stuff, you know. But
and despite the that in Lost at Last, which we just heard, which is, you know, there's a kind of a hopefulness within it, despite the kind of very downbeat nature of the music itself.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, here's the title track, Measure of Joy. How much of an upbeat are we going to get when Adrian starts singing about joy, which I'm sure he's sung about in the past. But here he is with the title track from the new album.
Harmony of bees, buzzing in my head. Can you hear the blue jays cooing on the lawn? Those lovelorn songbirds. On and on. Oh, the frenzy of insects and all the buzzing things high above the rooftops. It's enough to make you sing.
Measure of Joy, title track from Adrian Crowley's new album. And that has that bossa nova feel in the midst of it there, yeah, as well. Whose is the voice duetting with him there?
It's a woman called Nadine Khoury, who has also recorded her solo album with John Parrish. And I believe, if I have this correct, Adrian Crowley met John Parrish back in the 90s and was reconnected with him through Nadine Khoury, which must have been before, obviously, the last album. So that's obviously a fruitful partnership. And I mean, John Parrish has worked with people like Sparkle Horse, you know, like Howa Gelb, like really interesting people. And I think that it's quite a fruitful partnership, obviously, between the two of them. And I think those vocals, backing vocals, work really well because neither of them have kind of breathy, you know, voices, not these like booming voices. So I think they both work very well together.
And we were talking, Danny, about the kind of the sheen of production on both Inhaler and Ollie Alexander. The production here is very, like, there was a reference to the buzzing of the bees in that track. And there's just this little guitar, like, but it could so easily have been overdone, but nothing is overdone.
Yeah, it's very understated from start to finish. I feel like the instrumentation throughout is really, really scant, but it works really, really well. Like on that track in particular, those kind of like eerie little dulcimer sounds, the small short blasts of recorder, it just comes together incredibly well.
And that's across plenty of the songs on the album.
Yeah, and I don't know if we mentioned yet, but the Leonard Cohen influence.
I was going to ask you.
Because
it's an amazing voice. You know it's his the minute you hear it. But you can think of lots of other voices that it matches.
Yes, you can, but I think you immediately get the Leonard Cohen vibes, you know, especially on a song called Genevieve of the Mountain.
Even the title is so Leonard Cohen.
The minute you're seeing, I was actually Googling it to check. I was like, is this Leonard Cohen song? I didn't know. I think it's actually named after a place in France, in Paris. So according to Wikipedia.
There's a mountain just outside of Paris. I'm not going to butcher the name in French. I can't do that. Well,
but in English, it means Genevieve, hopefully. You get that in it. Yeah. And I enjoy that,
It is Adrian Crowley. You don't feel you're listening to a Lou Reed or that you're listening to a Leonard Cohen or any kind of version of that.
I can see the parallels, absolutely. I mean, it's hard not to make them, especially with the baritone voice. Like Reed famously sang that way. Cohen wasn't too far off, but it's very his own.
Yeah,
it's what
he
does with it, you know what I mean.
And don't be fooled by that upbeat.
getting upbeat on this record at all.
This is a late night album.
And
a late night listen. Yeah. 10th album. I mean, he
quite a milestone. You
know, So how did it fare for you in terms of that overall body of work and stars, Aoife?
I've pushed it up to 4 stars. I think sometimes it was a bit too chilled out for me, but I think there's a lot in this that's really, really great. And I, you know, reflecting on his whole career, what he's achieved with this, who he's worked with, and the opposite to the other albums, where you get a lot of him in it poetically, lyrically. Yeah. 4 stars.
Take time and listen. Stars. Definitely. 4. And what are you saying, Danny? Stars briefly.
I'd agree with 4, maybe even a 4.5, to be perfectly honest. I think this album kind of reveals more of itself with each listen. The storytelling throughout, mesmerising, the scant instrumentation, beautiful.
Measure of Joy, Adrian Crowley, Polari, Ollie Alexander, Open Wide, Inhaler, the three albums that Aoife Barry and Danny Kilmartin have been speaking about. And that's our lot for this Friday evening, indeed for this week. Liam Murphy and Paula Shields researched. Alex Lopatin was the broadcast coordinator. Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound this evening. And tonight's programme was produced by Kay Sheehy. Back with you Monday, 7 o'clock here on RT Radio 1. John Crean will be with you after the news.